We all have heard about Labor Day, and every year the nation celebrates Labor Day as a day supposed to be in honor of the working man. And I have a little information here on Labor Day. The first Monday in September is the creation of the labor movement and is dedicated to the social and economic achievements of American workers. It constitutes a yearly national tribute to the contributions workers have made to the strength, prosperity, and well-being of our country. Now, the character of the Labor Day celebration has undergone a change in recent years, especially in large industrial centers, where mass displays and huge parades have proven a problem. This change, however, is more to a shift in emphasis and medium of expression. Labor Day addresses by leading union officials, industrialists, educators, clerics, and government officials are giving wide coverage in the newspapers. The vital force of labor added materially to the highest standard of living and the greatest production in the world ever known, the world has ever known, and brought us closer to the realization of our traditional ideas of economic and political democracy. It is appropriate, therefore, that the nation pay tribute on Labor Day to the creator of so much of the nation's strength, freedom, and leadership, the American worker. Of course, that's the end of that comment, but they don't take anything into consideration about the blessings of Abraham and why we really are prosperous, although labor is a very important thing. So today, my subject is the good work ethic. The good work ethic. Now, if there's anything that is important in preparing your children for success in life, it's teaching them a good work ethic. And if you don't, they're headed for disaster. Now, let me establish this right as a fact. It is man's lot in life to have to work. That doesn't mean that everyone necessarily is involved in hard labor, because there's all kinds of different ways we labor. But we are required to do it, and certainly in this technical age, there are many, many options that are available for the workforce. But let's notice here, first of all, what we read in Genesis 2. Here's one of the very first things we find out in God's instruction to man. Genesis 2 and verse 15. The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to tend and keep it. So the very first responsibility he was given was what? To be a gardener. He had to work. And anything that requires tending and keeping means working. Now, we know that after man sinned, in Genesis 3, verses 18, we read, "Cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it." In toil. "Both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth to you, and you shall eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread." So man is required to have to work. And if he isn't taught to work, and if he doesn't learn to work as a child, as he grows up, he'll never be equipped to be a success in this life. And that's very important. Now, in the matter of work, we also have commanded the day of rest. So that's why we read here in Exodus 20, verses 9 and 10, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work. Then it describes all the various categories here that are involved in it. So we're commanded in the Bible to work 6 days and have a day of rest. And that, of course, is a seventh day, not a seventh day. It is the seventh day. Now, Solomon made an interesting comment here. There are many, many outstanding ones that he made, but I like this one here because it links in with the subject. He says here, Ecclesiastes 1 and verse number 8, "All things are full of labor." That certainly would not exclude work. All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. And in 2 Thessalonians, this whole concept of the necessity to work is found even quite clearly in the readings of the Apostle Paul, because we read here in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse number 12, "Now those who are such we command and exhort through the Lord Jesus Christ that they work in quietness, not to be stirring up and causing problems and troubles everywhere they are, even on their job, and eat their own bread. I remember years ago, I was visiting a man down in Missouri, and we were sitting there having an evening meal, and I told him, I said, well, just remember what the Bible says. There's nothing better than a man can do than to eat the fruit of your labor. See, that's not what it says, does it? So I was just kidding with him, of course. But anyway, in going back here to verse number 10, 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse number 10, even when we were with you, we commanded you this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. It's an absolute necessity of life. Unless you're a moocher and you're a freeloader and you're perfectly willing to live off of everybody else. And there are people like that, plenty of them. But I can tell you, let me emphasize, this is a very important point. If this is a major problem to people who are freeloaders and lazy and won't work, it is a matter of their overcoming even to gain salvation. It's a serious matter. You think God's going to take some lazy, worthless bum into his kingdom? Let's realize the seriousness of it. And 1 Timothy 5 and verse number 8. And if anyone does not provide for his own. Now, we're living in such a society today that if anyone does not provide for her own. Because the whole economic system is set up where women are forced to work in many, many cases. And it's contrary to God's way. And we have a lot of homes today where we have Mr. Mom. And so we have to realize that there, you know, if you don't take these things seriously, and I can tell you, if you do not help your children recognize these things and grow up, they're going to be just as confused as you presently are in the matter of the responsibility God places on every man to make their livelihood. If anyone does not provide for his own and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. That's a pretty serious charge, isn't it? Are infidels or unbelievers going to be in God's kingdom? I think that's pretty clear, isn't it? So that's the first thing I want to emphasize here. That man does have a responsibility, a God-given responsibility that he must meet in order to ever make it into God's kingdom. And there are people who need to take this seriously because they don't. Now we're talking about jobs. I'm going to begin here by talking about employee responsibility. What is your responsibility? And I'm talking about your God-given responsibility that the Bible instructs you as to what you're expected to do as an employee. Well, here's some comments from Neil Bortz on his website. Let's talk about your jobs, he says. Let's talk about your jobs, and the word yours in quotes. There seems to be the issues that are driving many, if not most, who are supporting the Kerry candidacy. First of all, I'm going to repeat this simply because it makes the whiners so unbelievably angry. Listen up. They are not your jobs. The job belongs to the employer, not to you. You have skills and presumably a willingness to work. Your task in a free economy is to get out there and find some employer with a job who needs your skills and strike a deal. If you do not have the particular set of job skills that an employer needs, or if you have priced your labor out of the marketplace, guess what? It's not the employer's fault. The fault lies with you. Either develop a new set of job skills that are actually in demand or adjust your pricing. The employer knows what he's looking for, and if you're not it, that's your problem, not his. Now, you're going to vote for a Democrat this year because of jobs. You mean to tell me you're going to vote against George Bush this year because you don't have a set of skills that are in our demand in the free marketplace? That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? So this is what's happened. What has happened is that technology is changing everything, and if you don't have enough foresight to recognize that and shift with it and make your job skills available for that type of thing, you'll be left doing what? Mediocre labor at the minimum wage scale. That's simple. It's just this simple. During your early years, you work to develop job skills and a work ethic, if your parents are teaching you. But if you just let them lie around and you do everything for them and you mollycoddle them and you don't make them get out there and do things and straighten things up and have chores to do and fulfill those responsibilities, what are you producing? I used to get up every morning. I didn't particularly enjoy it. I had to get up very early in the morning and drive my son out to pick various fruits and vegetables and kind of thing because I needed it. I did it because he needed it. And it was to teach him a work ethic. So during your early years, you work to develop skills and a work ethic. When your education process is over, you take your work skills, your experience, and your job work ethic into the marketplace. But what if you don't have a work ethic? You've never been taught it. If your skills you develop match an available job, and if you and the person who owns the job, the employer, can reach an agreement on wages and benefits, etc., you get hired and you start to earn an income. Where's the government role in here? Sadly, with each passing year, more and more Americans adopt the idea that the government is there to make sure they get a good job. Freedom and economic liberty cannot survive this level of voter stupidity. Now that's well put, isn't it? That spells it right out. Well, that's what we better realize. So I'm going to talk now about employee responsibility. What does the Bible say to you as an employee, what's expected of you? Let's go to Ephesians 6, verse number 5 here. And keep in mind, there was a system back in those days. It's a little bit different than our days, although the principle is the same, and I'll explain what I mean in just a moment. It says here, bondservants, be obedient to your masters, who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in sincerity of heart, as to Christ. Now remember, in the Roman Empire, slavery was a part of the system. So he's addressing this primarily, but let me say this. You think we don't have slavery today? What about all you folks that are clear up to your nose in credit card debt? Are you in slavery? You bet you are. You are in economic slavery. You've allowed yourself to get hooked. So the fact is, as the Bible says, the borrower is servant to the lender. And while you're working for some man to try to pay the lender off, you're still enslaved, aren't you? What's going to happen to you if you decide you're not going to work anymore and you're not going to pay your bills? You know something? I'm not saying this in a bragging manner. It was the way I was brought up. I was brought up in the Depression. If we wanted anything, we had to go out and scratch it out of the earth. We'd go around town, look down in the grates of all the windows, and if we saw a penny or something down there, we'd get a stick and a piece of gum and fish it out. We'd go to the city dump and scratch around and find copper and anything we could sell. We'd go down to the river and catch a sack of chubs and sell them to the lady who had a bunch of cats. We'd pick berries and this kind of thing, and that's how we got spending money. And I have never had a credit card company or somebody trying to dun me for a debt ever call me in my life. And yet I know people that have to hide and give different phone numbers and everything else because they're being hounded constantly by collectors. They're not enslaved? You bet they are. Now, when we're talking here about working for someone, let's just take this attitude here. Your masters according to the flesh with fear and trembling. How many people are there who just hate their jobs and they badmouth their employer and they badmouth their supervisors and they're generally rotten attitude? Now, you can understand that if they don't know a lick about the truth. But what if you do? You know, the easiest thing in the world is to sit and profess Christianity. But to live it, that's another matter. Ecclesiastes 9, verse number 10. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse number 10. Whatever your hand finds to do it with your might. That's absolutely true. You want to be a success. Whatever you do, do it with your might. You can't expect to be successful, particularly in a competitive atmosphere in which we live today, if you just do half a job and you're lazy and you don't care. So what is the required of you as an employee? Do it with all your might. Romans 12, verse number 11. Romans 12, verse number 11. It says, be kindly affectionate, and so on and so forth, giving preference, but I want to go here to verse 11. And as the Authorized Version uses the word slothful, it actually means lagging. Not lagging in diligence. You're diligent. Now, you know what diligent means? It means you pay attention to what you're doing, and you pay attention to what your instructions are, and you follow those things very carefully. You should never be the kind of a person that your employer tells you to do a certain way, and you nod your head, and then you turn right around and decide you're going to do it your way. Now, it could be some situation sometime where maybe the employer's wrong, and maybe it's a dangerous situation. That would be understandable. But on the other hand, who's responsible, you or your employer? Some people have the idea in their heads that they're more responsible than the employer, and they can tell him what to do. Proverbs 22. Now, we have a series of Proverbs here. Let's go back here. There's a lot of good advice in the book of Proverbs. And boy, I can tell you this. If I could name one book that would give you more common sense for living properly and wisely and successfully, and if you'd follow what's in that book, it's the book of Proverbs. It's just literally filled with treasure. And so you read here in Proverbs 18 and verse number 9, he who is slothful in his work is a brother to him who is a great destroyer. That's right. Somebody else has to pay the price if he's careless. That happens all the time. Proverbs 19, verse number 24. A lazy man buries his hand in his bosom and will not so much as bring it to his mouth again. Won't make any effort. Notice, a lazy man. You think there are very many lazy people in this world? Well, I can tell you there's way too many, especially in the time period in which we live, where you can go to some government agency and you can pick up this and you can pick up that and you can get all these benefits and you can get through life living off the taxpayers' money. Oh, the blessings of a socialistic society. Ecclesiastes 11, verse number 4. He who observes the wind will not sow. And he who regards the clouds will not reap. He'll find anything excuse he can not to have to go out and work. So those are the principles I'm talking about here. Ecclesiastes 4 and verse number 5. The fool folds his hands and consumes his own flesh. That is to say that he is virtually destroying himself. Folds his hands. What is he called here? Well, we're talking about lazy people and we're talking about fools. Why is he a fool? Because he has no foresight into the future and what success really is all about. Now, those are some of the principles. There are probably a whole lot more, but that sort of gives you the gist of it. Now, let's go to the next point. What is the employer responsibility? As an employer, what is expected of you? Well, let's keep in mind the same principle here, because they had servitude in the Old Testament period. And as far as the Israelites were concerned, the main and almost the total reason they had it was because people became so poor because of mismanagement, and as we heard probably from that report by Neil Bortz, that they didn't prepare themselves, they didn't do what was necessary to be a success, so they were financial failures and they had to sell themselves into slavery or to servitude in order to get by. So these are the kind of people we have. And so we read here in Deuteronomy, here's how God instructs the employer. Don't take advantage of him because he's in this situation. You shall not oppress, this is Deuteronomy 24, verse 14, you shall not oppress a hired servant who is poor and needy. Don't take advantage of anyone. Don't abuse him, and don't misuse him and mistreat him. I have an older brother who's, of course, retired and close to his 80s now, and he's not in good health. But he, at one time, was in charge of all energy exploration worldwide for Phillips 66. He had offices all over the world, men he was responsible for. And I asked him one time, I said, how did you handle various people and problems when they came up? He said, I had one principle I always practiced, and that is, talk to them the same way you would like to be talked to under those circumstances. Very good principle, isn't it? Keep this in mind here. You see, people get in circumstances in life many times inadvertently, not realizing what the consequences are going to be, and they have to pay the price. That's a part of this human experience. And when people are in this category, it even goes one step further. And whether one of your brethren or one of the aliens who is within your land, within your gates. So it didn't make any difference whether he's an Israelite or not. If he were forced to work for a particular man, he should be treated properly. Leviticus 19, verse 13. I bring this up because I think we all have known employers and straw bosses and foremen who have been quite the opposite of this. I worked for a man one time who was a civil engineer, and he had a surveying company, and we were doing a lot of work for Shell Oil in eastern Montana, and a lot of people didn't like him. And I'll tell you why they didn't like him. When you went out on the job to work for him, he was all work, all business. And he didn't say please, he just said do this and do that, and he was very, very abrupt. And we got the job done. And I had a lot of respect for him because he was a good employer. And when he was off the job, he didn't act like that. But that was a part of the whole program. Some people didn't like that. I've always said, you know, you have people that are so sensitive, and particularly in this younger generation, because I remember back in the 60s, some of the ministers there that were teaching at the college said to us all now, when we came out in the field to conferences, they said, you don't realize the problems we have with this new generation. He said, they're thin skin, they can't take anything. I've always said, you know, I don't know whether this will work for some of them, but they ought to do a stint in the military. You'd find out what abuse is. So Leviticus 19, verse number 13. You shall not cheat your neighbor nor rob him. The wages of him who is hired shall not remain with you all night until morning. So when we had a day laborer here who was living from hand to mouth and living from paycheck to paycheck, you better be sure you're paying him. Because the Bible says very plainly, if you have it to pay, you better pay it. Don't put it off. That's what your requirement is as an employer. 1 Corinthians 9:9. Years ago, I remember a Mexican fellow came up to me, and he had a real nice Levi jacket. And he took it off and showed it to me, and he said, I'll give you this jacket for a quarter. He was desperate to get a quarter. I handed him a quarter, and I said, forget about the jacket. So you see, people really get in desperate straits at times. And you got a day laborer here, he needs the financial assistance, and people in our time period live usually from paycheck to paycheck. And if things went bad, they'd probably go broke within 3 weeks. And so that needs to be understood. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 9. You shall not muzzle an ox while he treads out the grain. That's why the Bible says, you know, the laborer is worthy of his labor. Colossians 4 and verse number 1. Colossians 4, verse 1. Masters, give your bondservants what is just and fair. Just and fair. So you see very plainly that there were, probably in his day, so-called, quote, Christian masters who weren't quite teaching being fair with their employers. I think you all know today in modern business, what's the bottom line of everything? The almighty dollar. And boy, the profits and paying the dividends, that's what counts. And it does. People are in a lot of corporations today are just simply being used up. And you know what I recall, you know what I refer to most of these big corporations today? That's Pharaoh. You are idle, you are idle. Now not only will you mix the brick, you have to go furnish your own straw. They keep piling it on, don't they? That's par for the course. All for the almighty dollar and the profits. But masters, give your bondservants what is just and fair, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. That's what these people don't know, don't realize, and probably don't care. In fact, it's so bad. Here's actually talking about the last days before Christ returns. And what does James write here? James 5 and verse number 4. James says, you rich, as he says in chapter 5, verse 1, you're going to howl for your miseries are coming on you. Verse 4, indeed the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you have kept back by fraud, cry out, and the cries of the reapers have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. Pretty serious charge, isn't it? You know, I know there are some people who are just dead set against labor unions. Why were labor unions ever established in the first place? Because of the abuse of corporations and employers. That's what brought it on. Now, I'm not saying labor unions are lily white, and they've done everything right either. But abuses, often what brings about these things. Leviticus 25, 43. Leviticus 25, 43. You see, he's talking here about coming out of Egypt. And he said, verse 40, the hired servant and the sojourner, he shall be with you. And this was having to do with the servitude up until the time of the Jubilee year. And it says, he should return to his possessions after he's released. For they are my servants whom I brought out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as slaves. You shall not rule over them with rigor. Why is it that so many people get in charge of something and then they have all power and authority and they go around trying to prove it all the time? Nothing but human vanity, is it? Okay, now we'll read one more text here, and then I want to switch to the next subject to this. Let's notice Proverbs 22. Proverbs 22. And this time we'll go to verse number 16. Proverbs 22 and verse 16. We're talking here about employer responsibility. 22:16. He who oppresses the poor to increase his riches. Oh, you think that hasn't happened? And he who gives to the rich, in other words, he's trying to buy himself into success, will surely come to poverty. I remember I was reading about John D. Rockefeller, and they were making these barrels to transport oil. And he stood around watching them make the barrels, and he counted the number of rivets going into the barrels. And he asked the foreman, well, how come you put so many rivets in here? And the foreman said, well, we've always done it that way. He said, well, I'll tell you what, cut out one rivet out of every barrel. We'll save that much in the long run. No end to people taking advantage so they can get ahead. So that's the employer responsibility. Now let's look at two other areas here. We've read about a slothful man, haven't we? A lazy man. What are the results of laziness? What's going to be the end result and the consequences of being lazy? Just catering to yourself, making life as comfortable as you can for yourself. What's the result of it? Proverbs 10, verses 4 and 5. He who has a slack hand becomes poor. It's inevitable. It's man's lot in life to go out and work and to work hard and to be successful. And if he won't work, he won't eat. And if he won't work, he's going to be poor, isn't he? But the hand of the diligent makes rich. That's right. So there's success that comes about as a result of work. Proverbs 12, verse number 24. The hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man will be put to forced labor. He can't assume any responsibility. It's just a whole lot easier for him to be forced to do something he won't do voluntarily and really work to improve his lot in life. Now, of course, I don't want to exclude self-employed people and people running businesses because these principles apply to them just as well, too. And Proverbs 13, verse number 4. The soul of the lazy man desires and has nothing. Unless they can find somebody to freeload off of. Has nothing. So you see, they desire, they covet, they would like to have this and they'd like to have that. But they don't often get it, do they? Now, what has happened in our modern day world is we have this thing of drugs going hot and heavy. So what do a lot of these people do? They don't want to work. So they'll go around hither and thither, and they'll find somebody to supply drugs for them, and they'll become a drug dealer. I wonder how many people are in prisons today because they were too lazy to work, and they decided to try to make a fast buck in being involved in drugs. Pretty serious, isn't it? So we do need to realize, as it says here, very plainly, the soul of a lazy man desires and has nothing. But the soul of the diligent shall be made rich. So you see, not only does the word diligent mean being attentive and paying attention and being responsible and being somebody who can be relied on, it also means to be willing to work. Be diligent in your work. And I would say this, if you hate your job so bad you just can't stand it and it drives you crazy, you'd be a whole lot better to go prepare yourself for a new job. And if you want to be a success in life, it makes no difference what you're going to be doing. Success comes by being diligent and hard work, plain and simple. Proverbs 19, verse 15. Laziness casts one into a deep sleep. You know, they're like they're half awake. You know, if you're not energetic about something, your blood's not flowing, and you're not really putting some effort out, how are you going to feel? You won't feel like a wide awake, alert person. And that's the consequence of it here. Laziness casts one into a deep sleep, and an idle person will suffer hunger. Well, I don't know if that's true today in this socialistic society, and I'll tell you what I concluded some years ago. Socialism is the enemy of God. It's exactly what it is. And the reason it's an enemy of God, it does everything in its power to suppress individuality, improving your lot in life, gaining a good livelihood by good, solid work. It's taking from other people to take care of your needs because you will not put or don't have the effort or the skills to do it yourself. And that's what our society is today, largely becoming. So if it says here, he'll suffer hunger, but I'll say this. Anyone who's diligent, anyone who wants to be successful, anyone who puts the effort out, anyone who burns a midnight oil and does what it takes to be successful, can be successful. It's the drive and the determination you have. Success is what? One-tenth inspiration and nine-tenths perspiration. Proverbs 24, verse 30. I went by the field of a lazy man. I've seen yards like this. And the vineyard of the man devoid of understanding. So not only are we looking at someone who's lazy, but he doesn't have any understanding. If he had any understanding, he wouldn't be lazy, would he? And there it was, all overgrown with thorns. Its surface was covered with nettles. The stone wall was broken down. When I saw it, I considered it well, and I looked on and received instruction. You know what a wise man can do? A wise man will see something and say, uh-oh, that's not the way to do it. And he will not allow himself to get caught in that trap. So as he says here, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. So shall your poverty come on like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. You won't have anything. So that's another example of what I'm talking about. The results of laziness. Proverbs 20, verse number 4. A lazy man will not plow by reason of the cold. The literal Hebrew is because of winter. But certainly one would not be out plowing in freezing weather, but it simply means at a time period when it's not necessarily convenient, but it's uncomfortable. He will not plow by reason of the cold. He will beg during harvest and have nothing. That's right. He will not put himself out, so when it comes to time for harvest, he doesn't have anything to show for it. I'm just amazed at how many people in this world live hand to mouth. They never think about the future. And what's going to happen in old age? They're going to live off of, quote, Social Security? You know, most people, well, I don't say most people, but a good percentage of people who are on Social Security are really up against it financially. No, you ought to be thinking about the future, and you ought to be thinking on something that goes beyond Social Security. All right, now that's the curses that befall people as a result of laziness. Now, what are the benefits of a good work ethic? What do we get from it? Proverbs 14, verse number 23. In all labor there is profit, but idle chatter leads only to poverty. So someone who's willing to get out and work and not just waste his time gabbing or talking about what he's going to do. Talk is cheap. You don't prove anything by talk. You prove it by going out and doing it. And that's what it takes. In all labor, there is profit. Proverbs 16, verse 26. A person who labors, labors for himself. Which is the way it ought to be, shouldn't it? You know why communism has been such a colossal failure? People are not working for themselves. They're working for someone else, and they deeply resent it. If you know anything about the Pilgrims, when they first came over here to this country, they tried socialism, and they had a community pot, and everything went into it, and the women supposedly did all the laundry for all the men in the colony, and after a few, you know, we talk about failure being the result of crop failures. Why were there crop failures? Because no one would go out and work. They resented having to go out and work for someone else. Well, we're working for someone else too, because just look at your tax load. Thanks to this wonderful socialism that's creeping socialism that's going on all over the world. In Europe, it's a whole lot worse than it is here. I talked to a man one time who had been in Denmark, and he just absolutely resented everything that went on there, because he talked about the tax burden, how everyone just lives the whole their lives provided for by the government. It isn't provided for by the government. It's provided by other people who work, and their wealth is taken away from them. Ecclesiastes 5, verse number 12. Ecclesiastes 5 and verse number 12. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet. You know, it's really a good feeling when you go to bed at night and you actually feel you have accomplished something. You set out on a certain goal for the day, and you have to set realistic goals to begin with. And the problem with a lot of people is they don't set realistic goals, and they don't set a list of priorities. They just write a list of things down, and as they get to them, they do them, and then they end up half of them not done because they're trying to do too much, and they don't prioritize what needs to be done as the most important thing first. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much. So there's a great benefit to labor. And as we read here, for every verse 19, for as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given him power to eat it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is a gift of God. To rejoice in his labor. Now let me ask you this question. How many of you have ever had God open up the heavens and just pour things down to you? It's never happened to me. May happen to some. You know, when it says God has given you this, how does he expect you to get it? It says here, labor, doesn't it? This is a gift to God. The things that you receive in life eventually all come from God. There's not a single thing we don't have in this life that we don't enjoy is because a direct result of what God has done. We better realize that. Proverbs 28, verse 19. He who tills his land will have plenty of bread. Yeah, he got out and worked when the work needed to be done. But he who follows frivolity will have poverty enough. Yeah, he's not dedicated to getting out there and getting the job done. He'd just rather fiddle around and piddle around here and there, not accomplish anything. He may look like he's doing something, but I can tell you this. You can look all you want, but that's not good. You can look like you're doing something all you want, but that's not going to put bread on the table. That's what counts. Ecclesiastes 2, verse number 24. And let me just say here once again, you parents, you need to realize the seriousness of teaching your children a work ethic if you want them to be successful in life. And just remember what Solomon said. It certainly is true. Who knows who comes after you, whether he's going to be a wise man or a fool. And I can tell you one thing. If he's not taught a work ethic, he will be a fool. It's a serious matter to be a parent when you have children who have to grow up and face the competition in this world. Ecclesiastes 2, verse number 24. Nothing is better for a man that he should eat and drink and that his soul should enjoy the good of his labor, not someone else's. That's the problem today. You have a tax structure that is footing the bill for all kinds of people who have not prepared themselves and have not developed the necessary talents to be successful, educated themselves, learned trades, whatever it takes to be successful. They've wasted a good bit of their lives. Now let me show you the importance of being successful in what you're given to do. I gave you a series of examples here today that the Bible shows that is the obligation of the employee as well as the obligation of the employer. And we have, just in a broad sense, here Jesus gives us this example here in Matthew chapter 25 and verse number 23. And this is a parable. Remember the pounds? Now, we might think that we're only going to be judged on the basis of what we, how we invest. And this is not talking about this at all. That can certainly include that. But this is really talking about the responsibilities that God has given you in this life. And what does he say here? Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. Yeah, these responsibilities we have in this physical life are few things. So minuscule by comparison to the responsibilities in God's kingdom, they can't even be prepared. But I can tell you, if we can't be faithful in these things, he said, I will make you ruler over many things. Why? Because you've been faithful in what God expects of you as a human being. Whatever it takes, that's what's required. And just remember what David wrote here in Psalm 4 and verse number 7. Psalm 4 and verse number 7. You have put gladness in my heart, more than in the season that their grain and wine is increased. So the spiritual is what the real reward is. The relationship with God is what the real reward is. This physical life is merely a training ground. And one of the most important things for success in this life is to fulfill the responsibility God has all given us to make a living and to be successful. And that not only means for us, but that means teaching our children these things, giving them chores, seeing that they fulfill their responsibilities, making them complete the whole job. I used to take my boy out, and he would work all morning. They'd make him close down around noon. He'd say, well, I only made $2.50. And I'd say, well, let me tell you this. That's $2.50 you didn't have when you started this morning, wasn't it? That's where you begin. So let's realize that there is such a thing as a work ethic, and let's really recognize the importance of teaching it.